Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
For 25 years, Seth Lightman has seen it all. From the newest electric car revolution, solar power, bike lanes made in NYC, and now we are here. More electric cars, need for more renewables and eco-friendly products in our world. Well, now it's time for an all-out podcast for this time. You're listening to The Green Living Guy Show. He's funny, real, exactly on point, and some think his style is so raw, it's crazy. Let's do this, folks. It's time for The Green Living Guy Show with Seth Lightman.
What's up, everybody? It's Green Living Guy here. I cannot believe what's going on in New York. Holy sheetrock. I fly out to San Francisco for stuff I can't talk about, but I'm out here and everybody that I know is like burning in New York. And my wife even had to have her school district closed today. So if you say climate change isn't real, and that forest fires cannot affect things in other parts of the country, think again. Why we need to have cleaner, greener streets, cleaner, greener air. And the person I'm talking to is the most amazing person in San Francisco. He's got a fleet of 13 Teslas helping to make taxi experiences across the city and the area more pleasurable, more efficient, and with cleaner air. And I could tell you, I probably drove past one of them in the cab I was in last night, and they look beautiful. They're driving around and they're making real moves, not just in the streets, but really like the future of what transportation needs to be, especially in taxis, Ubers, car sharing experiences. They all need to be electric. Ryan Levinson from Kilowatts, thank you for being here. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
So one of the things I wanted to ask you if you could talk about was how you started this, your fleet of 13 Teslas.
Yeah. So really simply, thanks for having me again. I am the Kilowatts, that brand is mostly me. And how did I get started with building that fleet? Essentially, I was working at Tesla at the time. I had been working at Tesla for several years. I bought one of the first ever Model 3s, VIN 297, and then a year later, so it was a rear-wheel drive, long-range, dual motor.
Okay.
It was basically my entire after-tax pay for my first year full-time employment.
Yeah.
And so I bought that, and then a year later, you know, I'd saved up a little bit more money, but mostly Tesla was doing a program for, hey, you could buy a new Tesla at $10,000 off. And I looked at the depreciation for that first year. I was like, wow, okay, this is an opportunity. So it was an end of quarter push to get some more cars out. And I bought another car without knowing what I was going to do with my first car.
Talk about a deal. I mean, I got a deal when I got my solar and power walls, but folks, that 10 grand off, geez.
Absolutely.
Wow.
So it was a no-brainer to try to make that move. But then now the harder part was, okay, I've got most of my net worth basically tied up in two cars. What do I do with it?
Right.
And my first car was wrapped by Unplugged Performance, and I needed to unwrap it before I sold it. It just made sense to reveal the paint under it and whatnot.
Right.
And so, yeah, basically, instead of selling it, the head of video production at Tesla at the time was like, why don't you try Turing it? And basically, that's exactly what I did. Is I knew I was going to unwrap it. I shouldn't have the time. And so I put it on Turo just for a month. And that first month, it more than covered my car payments. And then...
What? Let's rewind that, yeah, folks. Yeah. And I might have my my audio guy put a rewind sound right here, because that I just need to... Say that again for folks. the what mode? You put a mode? He suggested you do...
He suggested I put it on Turo, the car sharing app for vehicles.
Okay.
It's basically, you know, think of Airbnb for vehicles.
Okay. So Turo is an app, folks. So because I didn't even know that. You'll learn something new every day. I mean, I know PlugShare and all the other ones, but never heard of that. So go ahead.
This is great. So Turo is where I've been hosting all my vehicles as I slowly added more, basically. After 3 months of hosting the one vehicle, actually, before that 3 months was over, I had added my other vehicle, and then I bought another one. So I had three Model 3s 3 months in, and I was just kind of sharing them all, and then whichever one was the last to get booked was the one I would use to get to work. And if they all got booked, I would take public transit. And that was totally fine.
And you cool with that.
I'm making plenty of money. It's like,
banking and you're using your assets as assets.
Exactly. Exactly. So then when the pandemic hit, I'd been at Tesla for 5.5 years, if you include the internship, 5.5 years.
Okay.
And it just looked like the whole world was changing. I had saved up more and more money with Tesla stock and everything else I was doing with my employment there. And I was like, I've never had this much money. I've never had this much opportunity. The world's about to change. And at the time, I was working at Tesla,
right,
in their recruiting operations department.
Okay.
So I'm not a recruiter, but I support the recruiters. And how much recruiting are you going to be doing during a pandemic?
Yeah. That doesn't look like a strong suit. So go ahead.
Yeah. So I self-selected out pretty quickly. And I was like, you know what? I'm gonna build this brand. I've already got three vehicles on Turo.
Yeah.
I'm gonna grow that fleet, and I'm also going to start a YouTube channel. Basically, the Kilowatts, as you all know it, is information and accessibility. Accessibility with all the vehicles that I've grown into my fleet, and information what I share on the internet.
Now, folks, just so you're aware, if you go onto the app wherever you're streaming this from, be sure to check all the links that we're going to put in the description here so that you can go check out Ryan and all of the stuff he's doing. So we're not just going to leave you with this interview, folks. We try to make our descriptions as extensive as possible so you have the best experiences possible, too, with talking, me talking to Ryan and you experiencing what we're talking about. So go ahead.
Yeah. I mean, so it basically just grew from there. When the pandemic got started, I sold my first Model 3, which was very emotional, but I bought two Model Ys like the week that I left my job.
Wow. Yeah. Okay.
I scared everyone in my family.
They're like, what are you doing? No.
Yeah. Leaving Tesla while buying two Teslas. This is aggressive. The goal has always been pretty clear to me that, like, again, I just want to get people excited about EVs and help them, like, get that first experience. At the end of the day, a lot of it is, helping people see the light, and some of that is what you can do online, but really at the end of the day, what changes minds is getting butts in seats.
Always.
So.
Always.
So slowly I grew my fleet. I bought a couple more cars. I have a couple friends who bought a few cars, and I manage their cars as well.
Yep.
Now we're just at 12 Teslas and one Rivian is the fleet that I'm managing.
Really?
Yeah.
I hate to ask, and I'm not trying to do it to do, anything, but I just saw a report today on Rivian. Is there any concern about your truck now that with what happened?
Are you referring to the car, the truck that caught fire in Mill Valley just north of here?
Yeah, yes. I just heard about it.
I mean, statistically speaking, that's incredibly rare. I mean, obviously there is a concern. We'd all like to know a little bit more about what happened there. Looking at the images, it looks like somehow the charge port interface, I don't want to blame Rivian, but I also don't want to blame Electrify America.
Yeah.
But it looks like something to do with the charger.
Yeah.
May have started a fire. Fortunately, it doesn't look like it even caught the battery.
Yeah. If you look at the car, folks, even on the Instagram, it doesn't look like a typical electric vehicle fire. That if it was a typical electric vehicle fire, you would not be seeing really any part of that Rivian whatsoever.
Yeah, and that's just simply because there's so much energy in the battery.
Right.
So it seems as if something caught fire towards the front of the vehicle. Obviously, no one's speculating, no one's expecting it to be malicious intent, like someone vandalized it. So it looks as if there's some kind of issue with that charger potentially.
Yeah.
But again, we can't claim more than we know right now, and we'll find out soon. And
I
am not worried because I know that at the end of the day, like, these cars are statistically safer.
Of course.
But it does seem something out of the ordinary happened there.
Right, it's an anomaly. And I know that MIT has just funded a significant study, not just like a a report, but like actual real work to ensure battery flames do not occur in the future. So I think it's like they invested, I think the report said that they're investing about $100 million just to ensure batteries don't go up in flames like that anymore. And by the way, folks, the statistical average of a battery catching on fire versus a gas engine catching on fire is like grapes and grapefruits. So the grapes are the little electric car chances, and grapefruits is the chance of a gas car catching on fire. Mm-hmm. But
it'll definitely catch more headlines, though. I mean, you know, everyone wants to know that we're moving into safer vehicles. And anytime you have something that's not safer, it's going to make headlines. And another example of that is, you know, the first time a Tesla in robotaxi mode kills someone, which statistically will happen, or someone's going to die in a robotaxi, even if it's not the robotaxi's fault, that's going to be all over the news. And it's going to seem like it's less safe, even if statistically there's way more deaths or problems with traditional taxis, other types of travel.
Yep.
Because it's what's new, because it's different, and because people are scared already, that they want to believe that it's less safe, even if it's safer.
Yeah, I remember when I've even back in the day test driving the first Teslas for as a press thing that I did for the Huffington Post, and I took it onto the Interstate 87 going north to Albany, put it in cruise control, and then put it into the normal the autonomous-esque mode that Tesla had at that time. And for it to change lanes and everything was seamless, folks. And they didn't, you didn't change a lane until it was safe to change a lane. The car knew what it was doing. And that was even back in 2018, I'm talking about. So technology has further gotten a lot better. So we need to realize that technology will only improve over time with autonomous vehicles. What are your thoughts about where we are with the technology and where we're headed with autonomous vehicles? Because I know we're not fully there, but we're heading there.
Yeah. I mean, that's a great question right now. I mean, especially given all the spaces that I'm in physically in San Francisco, car sharing with my work, Dispatch, a company that I'm just in the process of launching to focus on the car sharing part. Oh. And then, there's just a lot there.
Also, I've noticed a lot in San Francisco.
And that's what I was going to get at.
Okay, go ahead.
So I was just going to say, like, you know, physically in San Francisco, living here, I actually have the opportunity to access some of the robotaxi services. Cruise is right there, you know, in the city, and I used it last Saturday to get around. Right now, they're running it for free, and I felt very safe, you know, on a drunk night out, just taking it. And it's crazy. I mean, they're limited at 25 miles per hour, but this is technology that's becoming accessible. And, you know, you mentioned 2018. Back then, it seemed like Tesla was the only one that was potentially ever going to offer robotaxi services in the near future. And obviously, that can be seen different ways because Tesla's approach is so different. But there's now Cruise and Waymo that the public, Waymo, to varying degrees, can access. Zooks is still seemingly behind in this. But yeah, it's very interesting to suggest that at least in some cities, you can take a robotaxi right now.
It's pretty wild. I mean, guys, just basically a ton of cameras all over it, and it really knows what to do in the if-then. I remember when with the autonomous vehicle that I test drove or was in the experience of driving with at CES in 2018, when I helped Panasonic and Tesla announce the launch of the Model 3 battery, the solar shingles, and the power walls, that it got into a situation where it basically said what it stopped because it went to make a turn and then a car drove past it. So the bus basically stopped. Luckily, there was a gentleman driving it with a joystick, but it wasn't there. But yet a Tesla electric car was seemingly more autonomous on the road and safer than a bus. So like the technology is really wide ranging as to people's concerns and also what they're experiencing.
In use cases. I think that what's super interesting is with Cruise, I'm not a
You're good. It'll keep on recording.
Okay. So with Cruise, you're able to, with Cruise, you are only able to be in the back seat. They only allow for three people in the rear, no one in the front.
Okay.
With Tesla, it's not robotaxi yet, but the autonomous features right now, at least, require you basically still to be in the front seat, alive, awake, alert, and able to take control.
And grab, able at certain intervals to be holding the steering wheel.
Yeah, I mean, they would say that you're supposed to, you know, hold it all the time, but they only measure it every so often.
Right, right.
So it's a very interesting thing where, again, with Teslas, with car sharing, as long as people are in the driver's seat and driving, so to speak, they can have the car do the majority of the driving. With Cruise and Waymo, they won't even allow you to touch the wheel. That's a problem if you're touching the wheel, and that's seemingly a good thing, but also related to being, you know, geofenced. It has its own problems where, versus, again, with Tesla, I could go across the country and have it do 98% of the driving as long as I'm there ready to take over for that 2% when it can't.
When it needs to be. Right. Yeah, where it's learning, kind of like back from high school or even junior high school, the if-then, you know, there's that 2%, which is like, what happens if you get into a certain situation you don't know what to do? And then it teaches you that experience. And once you learn it, then it's inherently part of its system. That's what AI really, or the whole autonomous experience, is about. And I remember researching this or learning about this through Panasonic USA. You know, the whole interface of it is really learning what to do in an if. So
yeah, and it's amazing because, again, here in San Francisco, we see somewhat often cars getting stuck and having to learn. And then, you know, they may have learned some part of it, they may have not. They, you know, they may have hard-coded a solution. And again, Tesla's trying to go the approach where it is fully machine learned. And it's just fascinating watching these companies figure it out right here on public streets.
It is. It because that experience, folks, is going to then translate into every other vehicle that goes anywhere in the globe. So if that application or that software platform is used for other taxis in other experiences in across the country or across the world, it will remember that and then apply it. So that's really what autonomous vehicles are all about.
It's a promise.
Yeah, it's a future. So one question I have to ask, and knowingly so, is I remember you were in, because we know Elon Musk has acquired Twitter, and there was a conversation you were having with him, I believe, about his philosophy of why he did Twitter, and then I also have some questions about it. But one of the main things that I've been trying to explain to people, like on other apps, from learning about seeing your interview, you know, really firsthand, because everybody's questioning, what is he going to do? There's this thing called, I guess in China, called WeChat, and he wants to turn Twitter into a one-for-all, I guess, app that you can use for everything. So I really want to hear from you, because you were in that room with Elon. So I think your knowledge base is really better than mine on this.
Sure. Yeah, and actually, even to explain some of the Twitter stuff, which, yeah, contextualizing, I was with the Silicon Valley Owners Club, who basically landed an interview with Elon. We spent, we debated how much time we thought we were going to spend with him, 45 minutes or an hour.
Right.
It ended up being a four-hour interview. None of us had planned for that.
Oh, my gosh.
And so the questions kind of went wherever we wanted. It was a very conversational interview at a certain point. And so I was only supposed to film, like, you know, I only had, like, my SD cards were ready for an hour's worth of 4K footage. Anyways, we got into talking about the Twitter deal, which at the time was fresh and new. He had just kind of announced his intent. The deal wasn't going through, and the lawsuits hadn't started. And so Elon, in that room, started talking about how basically, yeah, he saw Twitter as an accelerator towards what he saw something like WeChat being. And basically he wanted to buy Twitter to accelerate his vision for X.com.
Yes.
But even to back up further, I think people forget or don't know that back in the day when I actually worked at Tesla,
right,
Elon talked about starting a new company called Pravda. And Pravda was supposed to be a way to rate journalists. It was just simply that. It was, you know, the New York Times author, blah, blah, blah. They are a B-plus journalist or a C-plus journalist. Okay. This was his vision way back when. He tweeted about it. I even sent him an email, like internally to Tesla. I probably shouldn't have.
Right.
But basically asking to be involved in that company. Because, I studied journalism, studied advertising at the University of Oregon. And to me, I saw some of that, again, in how certain articles were written biasedly to turn something, a molehill into a mountain? And so, again, the example we talked about earlier, the Rivian that caught fire, absolutely something that we'd like to know more about.
Right.
But if you suggest that that's a problem with Rivian as a company, No. It most likely isn't. And at least you can't claim that at this time.
No, I wouldn't claim it at all because my user case experience of it is multifold. But one important part is, as people might remember if they've seen my post online, is I've explained how Amazon is a significant partner of Rivian. And all of the, and a lot of the platforms that you will see, the future electric delivery vehicles that are Amazon vehicles, are the Rivian platform, the Rivian skateboard, as they call it. So, and I've seen it in my community regularly. Yeah. Like, it's the daily, just dropping the thing, doing the thing, going back and doing it again. And there's a guy in town who has two Rivians. Wonderful. One of the first guys who got two Rivians, loves them.
Yeah, they're great vehicles. But basically, so Elon has been thinking about truth and journalism for a long time. And then you add on the layer of Cambridge Analytica and what happened with Facebook. So I was running one of two Tesla Facebook pages at the time. There was the Tesla corporate,
okay,
the one where, you know, they advertise products, and then there was the Tesla Students Center. And that was a page that for years I ran. That was like my internship project, was making sure that potential employees, current students, would get excited about us visiting their campus. So a way for us to communicate out to a non-mailing list audience of students. And one day I got a call. I was out in Philadelphia for a hiring conference, and I got a call from the head of Tesla Communications at the time, a department that no longer exists.
Right, right.
I got a call saying, hey, take it down. Take the Tesla Student Center offline. Elon has decided that this is not something we want to be a part of. We do not want to be a part of Facebook anymore. Interestingly enough, they still have their Instagram page.
I see what's going on here. I see the path.
But yeah, so Elon wanted it down. And so I had like 2 hours to take it down.
Okay.
And I did. And, you know, kind of reading between the lines here, someone on the communications team who was supposed to take the main corporate page down didn't. And they took it offline, but they didn't delete it. They saw it from a marketing perspective. We've got all this data, all these customer leads. We can't do that. And I don't know what happened to them specifically. But basically, I don't know. Well, on top of that, I think Electrek basically reported on that because they saw the SpaceX page was down. They saw the Tesla Student Center page was down. But when you went to the link for Tesla, it still said, like, you know, it existed. It didn't show you any information, but the link still worked.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. And so I got very lucky that I kind of, again, could read how Elon wanted it. But all this is to say, Elon has always been hyper-focused on communication and marketing. And that's partly why I even left, because at the end of the day, I wanted to play a significant role on their marketing team. And I realized the role that I effectively wanted was one that Elon himself fills on Twitter.
Okay.
So I wasn't shocked when this purchase came, because I left knowing that that's what Elon is on Twitter. And guess what? The fact that he bought Twitter too, he cares so much about truth and all this.
Yes.
He saw it as a cheap way to get communications of all of his companies, of all of his ideas, under, to some degree, his control.
Yeah.
For better or worse, I'm hoping that, you know, it's very altruistic. Mm-hmm. There are some times where I've seen it's not, but at the end of the day, I think there's enough critics, and I hope there's enough listening to those critics to point Elon in the right direction and for this to be a good thing for humanity.
Yeah, no, I first of all, I've always supported Twitter, even, once I heard what they were doing beforehand, he owned it. I got a little suspect, but to say the least. But, you know, they were the first entity to verify me. So I always had an affection for them. And because they saw that I was worth, you know, giving extra credence to. So I did love Twitter. I do love tweeting there. And there's just so much hyper information that it comes out of there. How many million, I mean, it must be billions of tweets that go on daily. The amount of information that Elon is able to then utilize and apply to other applications in his cadre of products or products he plans to launch, it's a very fulfilling promise for him.
Yeah, no, I think that, you know, whether it for him or otherwise, to have a place of public discourse is incredibly important. And I, you know, Reddit exists and could be seen, and no one really talks about it as a social network, but that's because your profile is not attached to it. Okay, so where's your profile attached to? Facebook. Okay, but can you really trust Facebook? And can you really get news or information from Facebook? Not anymore.
No.
And not really ever. So I think that Twitter is kind of the last man standing in terms of like sharing opinions and not having them be too filtered. And I think Elon saw that with his own opinions and everything else and said, we need to preserve this. And I'm hoping again that he does that for like continues to preserve that for everyone.
Yeah.
Because it's, you know, to sound almost cliche, it's almost essential for our democracy given how the world works today.
Yeah, I mean, even just to call call the cards here, I'm even getting people on my Facebook account that are saying they can't even see test drives of electric vehicles that I've
put. Oh, it won't show your stuff.
Won't show my stuff.
Yeah.
This is test drives of electric vehicles, folks. We're not talking about talking politics and political parties here. We're just talking about taking an electric car, reviewing it for a week, and then telling the experience of it.
Yeah, I'd go as far as to say that everything is political nowadays.
Yeah.
At very least, to a social network like Facebook, you know, if you are a gas-loving guy, you're not going to love the electric vehicles. They want to, a lot of these social networks want to just make you feel good.
Yeah.
You know, you don't want to go to a platform and feel bad, and so they basically treat everything like it's a political matter. If you've got an opinion on something, you don't want to see the differing opinion, or if you do see a differing opinion, you want to be able to be right about it. So there needs to be a place of public discourse. There's a lot more that we are in the middle on as a country, but if we only see the far extents, then we're only ever going to believe that that exists.
Well, right, whereas, and to just complement what you're saying, whereas when I go and I ask people to go to Twitter and see if they can find my stuff, they're like, yeah. So there's really this manipulation occurring of how people are able to see information except on certain spaces like Twitter and some other ones, but you're not seeing it in places that you think you would on a daily basis, and that's very alarming when we're trying to be you know, educated folk here.
Responsible citizens.
Yeah, a part of a democracy or supporting the free flow of information so that we can, you know, economics is about perfect information. The better your information, the better you can make better economic choices, folks. So it's really surprising that we're being limited on our choices, but yet Twitter is constantly expanding it. Now they have spaces where, you know, it's kind of like a it's not even a competing against Clubhouse because Clubhouse is very harried, whereas when you have an experience on Twitter, it's very even all conversations seem very engaging, mm-hmm. interfacing, like you're really engaging with people. People want to follow you. People want to talk to you afterwards, DM you. It's not like this thing of just spam bot, you know?
And I think it really just comes down to, we roughly speaking know who that person is. Facebook had this opportunity, has all of our data to go this direction, but leaned so far into filters and just making you happy. And I think we have in Twitter a space where we can share opinions, can try to meet in the middle,
and have conversations.
That's great. So here's, I'm going to go back to Tesla now and the future of electric vehicles, because that is something that I'm always been passionate about. I swear when I wrote the second edition to the book, Build Your Own Electric Vehicle, did I ever think we would be where we are today? But it's here. What do you think now about this Ford-Tesla alliance on the charger port, so that Ford Mach-Es or the F-150 Lightning will be able to charge at a Tesla?
Yeah.
And that's huge.
It's huge. It's absolutely huge. And part of where that comes from for me is I've had multiple non-Tesla EVs. I share the core Teslas, the Rivian. I've had a Mach-E. It's so clear to me as someone who shares cars that the only car I want to share with people is Tesla, because it's so intuitive. It's so easy. And basically, as it relates to charging, the bar in my mind has to be better than gas. It has to be easier than filling up a gas station, because at least for now, it's going to take longer. So it better be damn easy, damn reliable. And CCS, the way that the infrastructure is right now, not being always reliable, like the credit card reader not always working, whatever it is, there's five different systems and they all need to talk and they don't always talk.
No.
And so Ford is one of the few companies that has seen that, seen the data, seen our social posts, and like, wow, the customer experience is not what it needs to be for this port. And they're finally like, wait a second, Tesla is offering this. Let's take it seriously. And they are. Next year, they're going to be providing adapters to everyone that's ever bought an electric car from them. I mean, not ever, but all the modern generation of electric cars, they're going to get an adapter. And the following year, they're going to roll out their first product with a Tesla-designed charge port. And I just think, again, you need people to feel that it's easier and better than gas in order to adopt, in order to buy. Yep. And Tesla supercharging is that better network. So to be able to facilitate that, it's a huge win for Ford. I wonder who's next, because Tesla is the largest, the best, the smoothest. All the superlatives are there.
Yeah.
And as people move over, it's going to continue. My only fear in that is just monopoly. Like, there needs to be, in a way, Electrify America, it's funny, they just moved from two ports to one on all their chargers. I want them to get better. They'll still in some ways be problematic, but since some of their stalls still have two ports, two CCS ports, I would love, what a great announcement it would be is if they also add a Tesla port. It still wouldn't be like Tesla supercharging where it's seamless, but we could slowly all move in that direction. And then in the long, long term, there'll be great alternatives to the Tesla supercharger if you want, but also that'll help prevent monopoly power. I think that's a good thing for everyone.
Yeah, I think though that this is, as I've explained it to people too, when it comes to really cords.
it's a silly conversation. It's like only nerds care about this. Yeah,
it's Apple and Android. You know, it's like, you know, it's the Apple cord versus the Android cord. But really what's going on is that, folks, the Tesla supercharger network is like no other. One time I was in Texas renting a car, an Avis, and they had a Tesla. They gave it to me. Nobody wanted to drive it. And they said to me, why don't anybody want to drive it? They said, because there's only 30% on the charge. I said, where's the nearest supercharger or fast charger? They said, oh, about a mile and a half down the road. I said, give me the keys now.
Yeah,
okay.
No problem.
All I needed was a top off to get to the hotel, literally about 10 minutes. Which was enough time to just get there, charge up, and get out. And then yet the day after I charged up with my mom, it took no time. It was so seamless. I literally just took the plug and went clip, and it just went off, because Avis had a deal with Tesla where it was just free supercharging.
Yep. So way cheaper than gas.
Guys, I got a – talk about getting a steal, because nobody wanted the car. They gave me a Tesla long-range, high-performance Model 3 for the same price as a small SUV.
And you didn't have to pay anything
And I didn't have to pay for it. And I had – and it was free gas.
Yeah.
Folks, I'm trying to make this as easy as possible for you to understand that electric cars are not here to scare, but they're here to – further empower you and further give you what you need, which is your money. You should not be giving it to oil. You should be giving it to yourself. And that's all we're trying to do here.
And I want to throw out something here just because you're absolutely right. And I think some people even hear that and don't believe it. You know, at the end of the day, Tesla is not going to have a monopoly on electricity. Electricity is readily available. I think people have this perception that, oh, well, again, if you misheard what I said earlier, oh, Tesla could have a monopoly on supercharging. That could be very bad. And it's, yes, that is a concern. We want to make sure that fast charging is available in multiple places.
I think you'll still have an Electrify America and you'll still have a Tesla. So there will be a couple of people.
Yeah. But what I want to put out there too is, you know, slow charging at home is what most people should do.
Oh, gosh, yes.
And it changes the paradigm entirely where you know, for standard commuting, you're never going to need a supercharger. You're potentially, if you've got solar or great electricity rates, you know, it's pennies on the dollar. You're paying almost nothing to get to work. I used to charge at work for free,
Were you renting then? Were you renting then? Because a lot of people,
The
concern. Okay, so here's a concern that a lot of people have that I'm getting in New York, is especially in the city, right? Is there's a lot of people that live in an apartment, they got nowhere to charge, so. This concept of being able to charge accessibly and for less pennies on the dollar than gas is something I really want to talk about for the next few minutes.
Let's briefly cover that. So yes, when I was working at Tesla in those first 1, 2, and 3 cars, I was charging at work every day. They were, you know, there was like a valet system that would rotate the car. So it wasn't like a guaranteed there was enough chargers for cars, but they took care of us. There was I always left work with more than 200 miles of range. Several workplaces have versions of that, especially here in California. And you can always ask your employer as well to install something like that in the parking lot. And often, because of benefits from the government or whatever else, they often benefit from it too. On top of that, since leaving Tesla, I've never installed a high-powered wall connector. I bought one extra mobile connector and plugged it into a 110 outlet. And so I'm actually currently just running, like, to support my fleet of 13 vehicles in the city. As some of my renters return my vehicles, you know, below a standard 200 miles state of charge. And so I'll just top it off with a 110 over the next 24 hours, a 110 volt, so a standard outlet. I'll add 50 miles overnight, 100 miles a day.
Right.
I'm back, you know, 2 days later, I'm back up above the rate of return. And so I'm able to manage these 13 vehicles, almost never providing them under 200 miles of range with just a 110 outlet. And I just think that a lot of people don't even think about, again, the cost of that electricity is pennies.
Yeah, folks. I mean, I know when I test drive cars too, what am I charging on? I don't have a 240 service for my thing. I charge it with the 110, with a 110 outlet. So it plugs into a plug that I'm looking at right now at the wall, and it goes right to the car. So, folks, this doesn't have to be difficult.
Yeah, and so I just want to close this concept with that, is that, a 110 outlet, the same thing you plug your laptop into, your phone into, you can get depending on the vehicle, my Rivian, 2 miles per hour, but a Tesla Model 3, 5 miles per hour. And so you can charge up overnight, generally speaking, more than the average person will use just overnight. And so, again, if you've got fast charging elsewhere, you've got everything you need.
That's very cool. So just to kind of wrap this up, because I know you're very busy, is where, because, you know, we always like to celebrate green living people or hear the, you know, green guys that are just doing their thing. So where do you see your company going? Where do you want to take your company?
Yeah.
If you were to look 10 years down the line or 5 years down the line, what is your vision?
Yeah. So the kilowatts, as you know, it is still a high priority. But what I just recently announced is a company that I'm calling Dispatch, or right now it's Dispatch EV. But colloquially, it'll go by Dispatch. And it's effectively, I want to go into the market of competing with Turo. I think Turo is a great platform. Arguably, you know, they satisfy a lot of needs for a lot of people. They support all vehicle types up to like 20 or 30 years old cars. That's great. But what they're missing with this broad approach is they're not supporting EVs properly.
Mm-hmm.
They have terms of service that like don't really make sense. So I might only be able to deliver the car to you with
you know, 200 miles of range. That's my expectation on my cars. But you go to return the car at the end of your trip, and it automatically populates saying return at 90%. And again, with a supercharger being maybe 520 miles out of town, depending on where you're coming from, depending on which vehicle you have, to get to 90% is going to take a lot of time. The metaphor that people use is like pouring a glass of water. You start a little bit slow to make sure you're pouring into the cup properly. As you fill up, it gets closer to full. You almost never want to fill it to 100%. That's kind of ridiculous.
Right.
But you're basically asking your guests to get damn near 100%. And that's going to be really slow in that last 5, 10%. And so I just think that's ridiculous. I think 200 miles is more than enough for most people to start their next trip on. And so there just needs to be better communication. We can pull a lot of this information from Tesla and other companies. We can see that the trip started with 200 miles and only ask the guests to return it at that same state. We can see if, you know, we're in San Francisco right now, if my renter, their trip is supposed to end in 5 hours, but they're still in LA, which is 6 hours away, and they're going to need a charge on the way.
Right.
Let's send a notification to both the host and the guest.
I was about to just ask that.
Yeah. Yeah. We can do all these things now today. It's just, these cars are more modern than anything else out there, and they're not being utilized to their full potential. And so I want to...
Is that what Elon talks about when he says that a Tesla is almost like a $1 million car?
I like that phrasing of it. I've never heard him phrase it that way. But that, yeah, there's a lot of additional utility. I don't think it's about it being modern, but there's a lot of additional utility baked into a car that can hypothetically drive like a robo-taxi, you know, drive for 8 hours a day, charge for 3 or 2 hours a day. You know, hypothetically, you could drive it more often than even that. Just utilization of these cars could be 24/7. If we shift our work schedules, you could basically have 2 hours of downtime for every 22 hours of driving. That's what he's thinking of. And I think the closer that we get to that, the better. Again, these cars have less maintenance needs,
yes,
wear and tear, and we can kind of just keep them running. So I'm thinking with Dispatch, let's turn a little bit of weekly downtime. So if you only use your car on the weekdays and you've got a different car for the weekends, or if you only use your car on the weekends and you commute with public transit on weekdays, let's take that extra utility, turning it from just, you know, 1 to 2 hours a day of driving just on weekdays. Let's add on those weekends. That's what Dispatch is meant to do. And then in the long term, we may be able to, you know, align with Tesla's objectives and facilitate the more, you know, every hour kind of utilization that Tesla's talking about.
Right. So to sum that up, that you want to make an extremely large car sharing network of cars at a minimum of 200 miles so that people can use them, but these would be your vehicles.
So no, it's car sharing. Like,
so it is
like
car
Turo.
Sharing.
Like,
yeah.
Turo, we just want to be a better version of what Turo currently offers. Something that...
Just want to clarify for the audience. So
yeah.
Because some people think of car sharing and they think of like rentals, or they think of this, or they think of...
Yeah.
I just want to clear
so it. So Turo is the Airbnb of cars. It's other people's property.
Okay.
And we're looking at right now, at least, you know, this is still early days in the business, but doing that specifically for electric vehicles and making it a much better experience.
Well, just to add on that, and I'll just add one point, which is that the story goes, 2001, I launched the electric vehicle project when I was working for the state of New York. Zipcars comes in and says, yeah, we're going to make every car electric in the fleet. They didn't, and look what happened.
At the end of the day, we need like great electric cars, and that's the one thing that Tesla changed in the whole market. It wasn't like electric vehicles didn't exist before, but electric vehicles weren't good before, and now they're great. And so we just want to just continue pulling out some of what makes them great and make it more accessible to people.
Yeah, I mean the vehicle that turned me when you go about butts and seats. The vehicle that turned me, which was the only thing that was out there, there was no Tesla back then, was the EV1, the General Motors EV1. They crushed that car, but that car did 0 to 100 real quick, folks. Elon kept that Espiritu, I guess, of the EV1 by, again, as he's mentioned multiple times, by utilizing the drive system and working with a company like AC Propulsion to make an amazing car go really fast, and with the help of Franz von Holden to make it look beautiful and have a great feel and flow to it. And when you add all that together, And great technology, there is nothing that can stop you. And that's what happened with Tesla. It's just amazing to see what has happened. I remember when I wrote the third edition of the book, Build Your Own Electric Vehicle, where we showed the build of a Tesla Model S, because when I met Elon and Franz von Holden, they said, when you do your next version of the book, please let's do this. And they gave me access to a lot of pictures that I had never, ever seen before anywhere. And it, you know, those pictures told 1,000 words, maybe sometimes 2,000 words. And we spelled them all out. And I'm grateful to them. And, you know, from that book, we were able to then expand what you're saying to complement what you're saying about the idea of electric cars, not just build and convert, but buy.
Mm-hmm.
And then what happened, which is ironic if you think about it, is when we did that, if you go onto any then website, they were starting to do build your own, folks, because we were telling the car companies that it's now in the league of car companies. This is not just a tinkerer's concept anymore, or the old 1900s or 18, you know, of electric cars, folks. This is reality now. And when they started embracing that, especially with the plug-in hybrids, when they started that versus doing all electric versus like what Tesla did, they started saying, when you go on the website, build your own. They started embracing it. So to see the whole car companies, all these car companies trying to literally catch up to Elon. And the first thing that I ever said to Elon was, thank you for building your own electric vehicle.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because it's so important to be able to just do it right. And he didn't just do it just to do it. He did it more than right. He did it exceptional. And look what has happened. He is now, again today, reported, you know, the largest, you know, wealthiest guy in the world. And not just because of anything, but the fact of that what he builds performs.
It's a benefit to society, everything that they've done with Tesla. And again, we wouldn't be here talking today if it wasn't for that.
Yeah.
There's a lot of the other great follow-on companies that were motivated. We're seeing the legacy automakers get motivated.
Yeah.
It's a necessary transition. I think it's the most exciting transition of our lifetime. AI, we'll see, maybe come that. I don't know.
Yeah.
But so far, this has been the most exciting transition of our lifetime.
Yeah.
And it feels like we're still in the early innings.
We are totally in the early beginnings, and to see your company in the early beginnings as well is really what's exciting here. Green Living Guy saying one small step at a time. Today, I really want you to read about Ryan Levinson and Kilowatts and what he's doing. And also, as we will put the links up to his future companies as well, we want you to really appreciate what's going on here in San Francisco with what he's doing. He's making more than waves. He was also a part of, as he mentioned before, he owned a Mach-E, and I believe he was part of that Mach-E road trip experience, which he won. So, you know, this guy is not just a Tesla former employee and lover, but he's also a guy who can win in a Mach-E if you give him the chance. So hats off to you. He's the green guy of the day that we got to support and make people realize that this is what green jobs are about. This is what the green future is about. And he's only helping people save money and a cleaner air, cleaner environment, and providing a benefit to society. Ryan, thank you so much.
Thanks for having me.
You got it. Sir!
You've been listening to The Green Living Guy Show with your host, Seth Lightman. If you're enjoying the show, please feel free to rate, subscribe, and leave a review wherever you listen to your podcasts. We really appreciate that effort. Until next time.